Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Grad students in Michigan finally making progress on a contract after a five-month battle. Machinists approving a three-year deal at Bath Iron Works in Maine. And today on the show, the Government Affairs Director, the AFL-CIO, and what the Teamsters are doing to help passenger service agents making poverty wages at American Airlines. Welcome to the Thursday, August 24th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with a longtime contributor of America's Workforce, Mr. Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO national website, AFLCIO.org. And we have a problem with the U.S. Congress. Not all of them, just a minority. The Freedom Caucus, as they are called. And we talked about this briefly with Bill in the last segment last month. There may be another government shutdown. Yeah. Impending government shutdown could happen at the end of September. Far-right House members will not support what they call a stopgap funding bill without certain conditions. Now, there was a deal on this with Speaker Kevin McCarthy some months ago, but there's some people that didn't like that deal, so they want to basically throw it out, make new conditions like more support for a border wall between the U.S. and Mexico, weaponization of the Justice Department and the FBI conducting political witch hunts, no blank checks for Ukraine. I mean, I could go down. Bill's going to give us some more details on this. Sad part about this. There are 12 government funding bills that need to be approved, and chances are they're going to have to come up with some kind of temporary measure because Congress right now is in recess. They won't get back until after Labor Day. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Biden's policies and what they're doing. Interesting story that posted from Goldman Sachs, huge investment firm and conservative, I might add. And they point out that manufacturing jobs, many of them, could be added to the U.S. over the next 2 years. The increase, which amounts to about 2% of current manufacturing employment levels, is partly due to the incentives and investments for the semiconductor and green technology sectors included in the Biden administration's signature bills, mainly the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS and Science Act. Looking at historical data, for the regions where most of the hiring is expected, and they're saying a lot of it in the western part of the country, they found that for every $1 million increase in manufacturing construction, which isn't very much, for every $1 million, we're talking 9 new manufacturing jobs. 9. Now, since they expect spending to be around $65 billion over the next 2 years, we're talking 585,000 new jobs. Now, where's that story in the mainstream media? So Bill's going to be our first guest to mix it all up. Secondly, we're going to go to Kimberly Barboro, and she is with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. She's the National Coordinator for Customer Service and Flight Attendants and co-chair of the Communication Workers of America International Brotherhood of Teamsters Passenger Service Association. And she's also president of Teamsters Local 104. She's got a lot of hats. Teamsterair.org and TeamstersLocal104.com, the two websites you want to go to. We're going to talk about American Airlines, which just cut a deal with their pilots and their profits, $1.3 billion in the second quarter. A lot of money. Well, they're paying their passenger service employees less than other major carriers in the industry. Some of the members, get this, they need public assistance with affordable housing and food stamps because they don't make enough money. The company has not raised rates since 2019. They took leaves during COVID, assisted in lobbying efforts in partnership with the airlines to get relief for the industry. I mean, all the unions did that, and the industry got a lot of money. So they supported the industry, and the industry is not supporting them. And on top of it, the union is very concerned that American is going to come after jobs by wanting to replace the workers with artificial intelligence and automation. In fact, there's already stories about the company using AI for customer complaints. On top of that, members deal with assaults, both verbally and physically, every day. They're on the front line with the traveling public. They're tasked with getting planes out on time in order to get people to their destinations without delay. And, you know, when something goes wrong, they take the hit. Kim says they had water bottles thrown at them, have been pushed, punched, keyboards ripped out and thrown at us, phones put in their faces with people filming them. How do you work in that kind of environment? It's ridiculous. Especially with poverty wages. And I'll tell you, Kim's got a lot of experience. She started at American West Airlines as a reservation agent going back to 1988. Then she became a flight attendant and worked at Ramp Catering, customer relations, ticket counter agent, gate agent, club agent, trainer. She even helped organize a campaign back in 2004 with the Teamsters, became a shop steward, elected to the negotiations committee. And then there was a merger committee with U.S. Airways. Then she became a coordinator for organizing the American Airlines U.S. Airways merger with Teamsters back in 2013. And then national coordinator for customer service and flight attendants. That was about 6 years ago. So Kim Barbaro will be our second guest right here on the show talking about all that and more. Now, a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. BoydWatterson.com is their website. Graduate Employees Organization at the University of Michigan voted to authorize their bargaining team to agree to the university's latest contract offer, potentially bringing an end to nearly 5 months of striking. We covered this. It was horrible, and it wasn't going anywhere. The Graduate Employees Organization began striking at the end of March, March 27th, and previously rejected five contract offers from the university. The strike was primarily centered around demands for expanded health care coverage for grad student employees, including gender-affirming care and pay parity for those working at all three University of Michigan campuses. While the university's final offer made some concessions in these areas, there was uncertainty among the students if it fully met their demands. Well, here's the deal. The contract includes raises of up to 20% over 3 years, better health care and benefits, and $1,000 bonuses for all grad students, all members of the union. Both GEO, again, Graduate Employees Organization, and the university have been negotiating through this month to reach an agreement. And classes, of course, they're right around the corner. Largest union at Maine based Navy shipbuilder Bath Ironworks has approved a 3-year contract. That would be the Machinist Union, Local S6. They represent 4,250 of the shipyard's 6,500 employees. The deal was approved with 72% of the members voting in favor. Contract includes yearly pay raises, 4 to 9.5% in year 1, 5% in year 2, and 4% in year 3. And the company will also increase 401k contributions. Now, the contract does eliminate an unpaid week off in late December and increases health insurance premiums by about 4%. It's an increase, but not too bad. Despite the concessions, the union negotiating committee called the proposal a clear indication that our company believes in its current workforce. Now, if you go back 3 years ago, I remember this, in 2020, Local S6 struck for 2 months due to a contract negotiation disagreement. Both sides were eager to avoid a strike in this round of talks. And by the way, the shipyard was recently awarded a large Navy contract. I'm sure that had a lot to do with what happened there. And one more here. Paramedics and EMTs working for Elite Ambulance, which is a private firm, have filed a class action wage theft lawsuit alleging that the company unlawfully deducted the costs of red light and speed camera tickets incurred during emergency calls from their paychecks without their consent. These are people on an emergency. I can't even believe this happened. But anyway, the deductions, instead of contesting the tickets, were made for incidents that occurred while the emergency vehicles were running with lights and sirens. The plaintiffs argue that these deductions were imposed on paramedics and EMTs who are engaged in life-saving work and believe the company either did not want to appeal these tickets or bear the cost themselves. So while the deducted amounts were about $100 each, which can be significant depending on income, such relatively small sums often deter individuals from pursuing wage theft claims. What are you going to do? Hire a lawyer to get back a couple $100? Well, Elite Ambulance, with a sizable workforce and fleet, could face substantial liabilities if the lawsuit is certified as a class action. Meanwhile, the plaintiffs initially discussed these issues during an organizing drive and have also filed for a union election with the NLRB to address various workplace problems, including low pay and inadequate equipment. Getting a ticket when you're on an emergency call, and then you have to pay for it. Unbelievable. All right, quick break when we come back. Bill Samuel on behalf of the AFL-CIO.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at LIUNA.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, where you can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to Washington, D.C. right now. Welcome Bill Samuel back to the show, longtime supporter of America's Workforce. He serves as Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation. AFLCIO.org is their website. Do check it out and take a look at how many strikes are going on in the United States of America right now. I mean, labor is fired up right now. The good news this week, of course, the Teamsters were thinking about striking at UPS, and they ratified a new contract. They still have one local they got to deal with, and that's a local in Florida. And I understand the issue has to do with the fact that they are going to air condition the trucks, but they're not going to start that until the beginning of January. And the folks in Florida are saying, wait a minute, we need them now. It's hot down here. So we'll keep you posted on that. Teamsters.org is their website. Let's go to line number one. Welcome, Mr. Bill Samuel. Last time we had Bill on the show, he was talking about a possible government shutdown. And I was thinking to myself, no, not again, not again. But I guess it's heating up. Bill Samuel, welcome back to America's Workforce. And again, I guess it's a minority in Congress, a few people, far right wingers. I guess they want to upset the apple cart here, right?
Yeah, I think we're looking at a shutdown perhaps as early as the end of September. And this would likely be a total government shutdown. You know, last time this happened, Trump was president. It was 2018, I think it was December. And some of the funding bills had passed. I think 4 out of 12 had passed. So not every agency was affected. It was about 800,000 government workers, mostly domestic agencies, agriculture, labor, health and human services, education, homeland security, who were affected. And that lasted 35 days while Congress wrangled over whether or not to fund the border wall. That was the issue when Trump was president, why they shut down the government, because they couldn't reach agreement on that. And he wouldn't sign a bill that didn't fund it. He finally backed down, by the way. And I think that's very instructive for what's going to happen this time. I think, you know, the American people, I think they just instinctively and wisely believe that when the government shuts down, it's the Republicans' fault because they don't really believe in government. Democrats right. do. They fund the government. They fund programs that help working people generally. I mean, not everybody is in love with the Democrats or the federal government, but I think they just recognize that there's that basic difference between the two parties. In any case, this time around, no appropriation bills have passed. None of the agencies have been funded, starting, you know, but that would start September 30 at the end of the current fiscal year. And they're no closer to a deal now than they were last June. In fact, I think they're moving further apart. And the reason is the extreme right wing in the Republican caucus in the House, the so-called Freedom Caucus, is about 48 members. And remember, Republicans have a 4-vote majority in the House. So if no Democrat votes for this, they basically need every Republican. But 48 Republicans have already said they are not going to vote to keep the government open unless their demands are met. And their demands are pretty extreme, and we can talk about that. But the point is they come back in the House September 12th. They have about, I think, 12 working days, you know, when you consider the days they take off and the weekends, to fund the entire federal government, all 12 bills. None have passed so far. Well, one passed the House before they left, but it hasn't passed the Senate, and it won't pass the Senate in time. So we are looking at the potential for a total government shutdown in a matter of weeks.
12 working days. Now, that's in the House, and then don't they have to get agreement
on
the
Senate? Well, they would have to, right? The bills would have to go to the Senate, which, of course, is still the majority of senators are still caucus with the Democratic Party, 51, so it's 51-49. And the Democrats have been pretty united in the Senate. You know, occasionally we lose Joe Manchin from West Virginia, but basically they've been united. And I don't think they're going to reach agreement, but I don't think the House is able to pass the other 11 bills. The right wing feels that they spend too much. Democrats aren't going to go along with it because the bills don't spend nearly enough. And they include all kinds of policy riders on abortion, on LGBTQ rights, on green energy jobs, clean energy jobs, all these things the Republicans want to get rid of. They're including in these appropriation bills. They're what they're called policy riders, and they're saying none of the funds in this bill can be spent to pay for reproductive health care or LGBTQ protections or clean energy jobs under the Inflation Reduction Act. So those bills are not going to pass the Senate, and I don't think they can pass the House either at this point. So you're looking at a big gulf between the two parties, but the main problem is the divisions within the Republican Party. I don't think they can get a majority for anything right now. And that really puts Kevin McCarthy square in the target zone for losing his speakership if you can't pull this off.
I was reading that McCarthy may float a short-term bridge that would give him more time on this.
Are you hearing it? And that's normally what happens, you know, in the normal circumstances. They get to the end of the fiscal year and they haven't passed every bill. There's 12 of them again, and it can be daunting to get them all through both chambers and signed by the president, particularly when you have divided government. And what they do is they get to September 30, and before midnight they pass what is called the continuing appropriations resolution. Basically, just status quo. We'll continue to fund the government along the same lines at the same levels as the previous bills required, so that it just continues along until they can pass a new bill with new funding levels. And those CRs, in shorthand they call them CRs, they can go for 30 days, they can go for 90 days, they can basically as long as it takes to negotiate out a deal. The Freedom Caucus I mentioned earlier, they've already threatened not to vote for a continuing resolution. If they don't get their way by September 30, they're going to vote to shut down the government. And they think where they live, these are very red districts, this will be popular. They'll be seen as, unwavering, unflinching conservatives. I think they're wrong. Now, maybe in a few of these districts, they'll be seen as heroes. But I think by and large, Republicans will get a black eye, as they did when Trump had to back down in 2018-19. You know, he did back down after 35 days. He said, no, I'm not going to sign a funding bill until the wall is totally paid for. It wasn't. And he ended up backing down because the shutdown angered the American people. You could Social Security offices closed, national parks closed, the air traffic control system was a mess. People do depend on government. They just don't think of it until it disappears. And sure, I think that's going to happen again.
Okay, help me out on this. Now, a couple months ago, we went on this crusade to raise the debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. And there was a fight over that. Is this part of that as well? I mean, or what?
Well, it actually kind of is. You know, what happened when the Republicans threatened not to raise the debt ceiling so that we couldn't pay our bills, there was a threatened default, which would have, according to a lot of economists, would have caused an economic collapse or calamity, I should say. You know, it would have been this devastating blow to the world economy if the U.S. decided it wouldn't pay its bills on time. So we got right at the edge of this default. The Treasury Department said, I think it would happen on June 5th, I think was the day that Secretary Yellen said would be the date that we would default if we didn't extend or raise the debt ceiling. We got close to it, and that was considered worse than a government shutdown. And so McCarthy and Biden struck a deal. And the deal was, we'll continue funding the government at basically current levels for 2 years. We won't pass Biden's budget increases, but we'll continue spending about the same amount. And McCarthy got his caucus to agree to that. But a lot of them were angry. And they said they were sold out by McCarthy. And I think what you're seeing now is McCarthy backing off because, the ink was barely dry on that deal in June. And when he started to say, well, you know what, the level funding for 2 years, that was a ceiling. We can go lower, and I'm happy to go lower. Well, I'm happy to cut, say, $100 billion from current spending, and that's what the right wing, the conservatives, want him to do now that the time has come to actually pass these appropriation bills. They're talking about a $100 billion cut. And by the way, that translates into about a 28% cut in Department of Labor programs, more than a quarter of funding for DOL programs like OSHA, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, Wage and Hour Administration, almost a 30% cut, and the NLRB, literally a 30% cut in funding for the NLRB. And this comes at a time when we have record numbers of union election petitions being filed and ULPs being filed. We need a stronger, bigger NLRB to protect workers who are trying to organize, not a 30% cut. And that's what the Republicans want, and that's one of the issues that's going to be debated as we get to the end of the fiscal year.
Yeah, there's some Republicans that want to see OSHA go away totally.
I don't know if you watched the Republican debate last night. They want to eliminate about five departments, including the Department of Education. Nobody mentioned the Department of Labor, but I'll bet if they'd asked, they would have said they want to get rid of the Department of Labor.
Sure.
No doubt in my mind.
And what do we need education for, right?
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah, this is a nihilist party. They don't believe in government. They want to shut it down. Listen, they want to get rid of the IRS. You know, I don't think they have a problem with, you know, the world's, you know, the biggest corporations and richest Americans not paying taxes. Apparently, if get rid of the IRS, no one's going to pay taxes.
Now, okay, let's stop right there. Now, if they got rid of, how are they going to fund the government if you got rid of the IRS? I mean, are they talking, does this go back to the, like, a flat tax or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think they would like, you know, everybody pays the same, regardless of how much you earn. You know, and government, in their view, would be a fraction of the size. You know, they certainly wouldn't have a National Labor Relations Board. As you said, they'd get rid of agencies like OSHA. They'd get rid of the Department of Education. They just have a fundamental, you know, different view of what a modern democratic society should look like. And I don't think the public is with them. I think it sounds good sometimes to people when they don't think about it. But as I said, the last government shutdown, when it finally ended, and you know, there were numerous polls conducted, people were really fed up with Republicans that they had shut down the government and made people's lives more difficult. By the way, the other thing that would shut down is all the construction projects and infrastructure improvements that are being made now under the Biden administration. None of that would be funded.
Unbelievable. Bill Samuel joining us on our live line today. He serves as Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO, AFLCIO.org is our website. Later in the show, we're going to check in with the Teamsters and find out what's going on at American Airlines passenger service operation, poverty wages, and some jobs may be replaced by artificial intelligence. Back in a few minutes on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go back to Washington, D.C., rejoin Bill Samuel on behalf of the AFL-CIO, where he serves for a long time now as Government Affairs Director. Tough job, especially with the changes in Congress. We talked about a possible government shutdown at the end of September, but let's talk about some good news, which is so important because in the mainstream media, we're not hearing the real story of what the Biden administration did, especially in the first 2 years before the House changed, political parties there in leadership. And Bill, I saw this post, which I shared with you the other day, from Goldman Sachs. Not what you call a real liberal group here, okay? I mean, this is a very conservative investment group, and they're a big player on Wall Street. And they took a look at two of the policies that came out of the administration, the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS and Science Act. Inflation Reduction Act, by the way, didn't get any GOP support. CHIPS and Science did. And as a result, we're seeing a lot of these CHIPS plants, one in Ohio, going up. And I believe there's one going on in Texas as well as Arizona. They did some calculating on this, and they said for every $1 million increase in manufacturing construction spending levels, that leads to 9 new manufacturing jobs. And that comes out to just shy of 600,000 new jobs. They figure spending to be about $65 billion. All right, we're talking about it on this show, but who else is talking about this? Now, I know the AFL-CIO is doing its best to get the message out on all this. The Democrats are maybe lacking a little bit. I don't know. What are you hearing? Why isn't this resonating, Bill?
I think a lot of this has to do with how people get their news these days. You may have heard of Bidenomics. The president and his communications team thought if they rebranded the administration's economic policy, somehow that would take hold and the public would begin to recognize what's happening around the country. You know, you mentioned manufacturing jobs. Since the president took office, we have about 800,000 new manufacturing jobs, more than before the pandemic. So things are really on the rebound. And I think, as you correctly pointed out, this is due in large part to government investment in jobs and manufacturing, whether it's semiconductors or wind power, solar, nuclear, there's electric batteries. There's a lot of investment that the Congress, supported by the president, passed before the Republicans took over, and that's now working its way through the economy. You know, we've got very low unemployment. I think it's 3.5%. That's the for an extended period of time, it's been under 4%. I think that's the best we've entered or in the middle of the best period of employment in like 40 years. But you're right, people, they're complaining about inflation, and inflation's real, although the numbers have come down. Anyway, I think it's how people get their news and partly how they feel. So if you're watching Fox News or One American News Network, or you're getting your news from Facebook, from your conservative Republican friends, it's going to be all doom and gloom. Things are terrible. Price of eggs have gone up. Price of gas has gone up. And they're not going to really, they may hold on to their job. They may know there are jobs being advertised around where they live, but somehow they're just inclined to believe the worst. And if you listen to Trump, he says the economy's going to hell. You know, the U.S. is in decline. That's what Republicans on the debate stage last night, they all said it. Country's in decline. Economy's terrible. It's actually not that terrible. Now, I will say that these manufacturing jobs are not all good union jobs, and they're not going to be unless we can organize them. But I think that's where the presidents would like us to go. And the law is the law. We haven't passed the PRO Act yet, so they're not going to automatically be union jobs. But if we organize them, they will be, and that will make them good jobs, like those Teamster jobs at UPS and the UAW jobs, the Big Three. Those are good jobs because unions negotiate contracts. Mm-hmm. All the jobs being created aren't automatically going to be union jobs.
Now, here's a problem. And a lot of those jobs that we're talking about are in red states, southern states. And I'm just wondering, why is that? Because these are states that are not union friendly. Do you have an answer to that?
Well, you've sort of answered the question yourself. You know, the government is not, they're not saying where companies need to build battery plants. They're going to get the tax incentives to build them wherever they decide to build them. Semiconductor plants. You know, many of these companies are foreign-owned, and because we don't have the technology right now, so that we're depending on Taiwanese companies and others to build plants here. I mean, the president's goal is to reshore, onshore, these jobs, rebuild the semiconductor industry with new plants in the U.S. so we're not caught with a shortage as we were during the pandemic when China stopped producing semiconductors. We'll have the plants here in the U.S. And as this new electric car industry gets off the ground, and it is, it's smoking hot right now, that it be, that it's here, that these aren't, the batteries aren't made in China, the cars aren't made in Mexico. It's all done here. But the government, you know, we live in a capitalist society, doesn't tell companies where to build their plants. Now, it's giving them incentives to pay prevailing wages when they, during the construction phase, use project labor agreements, registered apprentices. But when it comes to manufacturing, it's not saying they have to be union. We tried that, by the way, when the Inflation Reduction Act was going through Congress. We tried to get the Congress to pass some provisions that would say you get extra tax credits if they're union jobs, if they're paying prevailing wages in the manufacturing sector. We didn't succeed at that. Now, we didn't have big enough majorities to get that. So going back to your initial point there, they're going, a lot of these plants are going to southern right-to-work states because that's where companies want to locate the jobs. You know, we're just going to have to organize those plants, whether it's in Tennessee or South Carolina, Georgia or Alabama, and that's where a lot of these electric battery plants are going, as you said.
Yeah. Well, it's a role for organized labor, and that is happening. I know Alabama's doing a pretty good job when it comes to organizing. Mississippi, well, they got a way to go. South Carolina's got a way to go. But again, it's important that we have a strong National Labor Relations Board, which is something, as you pointed out in the first segment, the Republicans would like to weaken. So it's very sad. Very sad. The balance, the counterbalance that's going on in Washington right now. Let's talk about unions here. And you mentioned to me before we started the show today that there's going to be kind of like a State of the Union message coming from Liz Shuler next week, right before Labor Day, to talk
That's
about
right.
what's going on with unions in America. I'm sure you got a preview. Can you share anything with us right now, Bill?
Well, we're pretty encouraged with what's going on. As you said, there is a lot of organizing going on. President Shuler is going to give a speech on Tuesday, 29th, a couple days before Labor Day. She's calling it the State of the Unions. Now, this is the leader of America's labor movement, is going to bring people up to date on what's going on in the labor movement. As you know, there have been a lot of strikes. They're calling this, Union Summer, Red Hot Union Summer. You saw the Teamsters negotiate a really historic contract. UAW's in the middle of bargaining. There have been some hospital strikes. Of course, there's the Writers Guild and the Actors Strike going on. And I think what she's going to report is that the public is standing behind workers. And it's really a very positive. I mean, we're not happy about strikes. When they happen because bargaining breaks down and companies refuse to agree in what we believe would be fair contracts, fair wages, a fair division of the profits they're making. You know, these big Hollywood companies are, these are billion-dollar companies. They're paying their CEOs hundreds of millions of dollars. And writers are, you know, living in their cars. You know, actors who aren't Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, you know, were taking jobs and as waiters and waitresses so they can make ends meet. So this is what's causing these strikes. And I think what President Shuler is going to point out is the public is standing behind workers for a change, and support for unions, particularly among young people, has risen dramatically over the past few years. And that's a good news story that she's going to report.
I'm glad you pointed that out, too, because there's a lot of people that think, oh, my God, you know, these Hollywood stars are making a lot of money. Why do they even need a union? But, boy, for the most part, there's a lot of struggling actors and actresses out there. And it's kind of similar to what happened, and that's why we have unions in baseball and football. I mean, there was a time where they were making peanuts. Especially, you know, on the farm teams and all that.
The minor league baseball players, there were stories a few years ago that they literally were living in their cars.
Yeah,
they weren't getting paid. You know, they basically have to commit an entire year to this for training, for being ready for the season, and they were not getting paid. They weren't even getting paid the minimum wage, these minor league players. They've organized, by the way. It's another good news story. We're organizing more workers. Minor leagues now have a union. And they're going to get a decent wage, we think. And a lot of these sports, as you pointed out, you know, you play for 4 years and then you're done.
Right.
So now they have pensions, they have health care. We're not talking about the ones who signed $20 million contracts. We're talking about the journeyman players in these major league teams. And so, yeah, they need a union too.
And again, it goes back to the media, because when somebody signs that $20 or $30 million contract, that gets all the press. And then there's the perception that everybody's making that kind of money,
That's
or
right.
close to
That's
it
right.
anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Good conversation, as usual. Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO. Looking forward to that speech from Liz Shuler next week. That'll be next Tuesday, and I'm sure there'll be updates on AFL-CIO.
It's going to be live-streamed at 11 o'clock Eastern Time.
Okay, very good. Thanks for the tip on that.
Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you, brother. You take care. We'll talk to you at the end of September. We'll be closer to doomsday, I guess.
We could be. Hope not. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to focus on American Airlines passenger service employees making poverty wages. The Teamsters are going to try to fix that, and they'll be coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. And joining us from Louisville, Kentucky today is Kimberly Barbaro, and she's with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. She serves as National Coordinator for Customer Service and Flight Attendants and is co-chair of the CWA IBT Passenger Service Organization and president of Teamsters Local 104. A lot of hats here. And she's here to talk about passenger service employees with American Airlines. Here's a carrier that's making a lot of money. I mean, $1.3 billion with a B. In the second quarter. In fact, we talked yesterday about a four-year deal with the American Airline pilots. But apparently, the money's not stretching very far with American, and that's why Kim is here to explain what's going on. Kim, thanks for joining us today. But before we get into that, talk to me about this. I guess there was like a merger between the CWA and the Teamsters some years ago. Can you reference that first before we get into what's going on with the passenger service employees?
Sure, I'd love to. Back in 2004, when the Teamsters organized America West Airlines, the CEO, Doug Parker, at the time announced that they were pursuing a merger with U.S. Airways. And with both carriers, U.S. Airways had just gone through bankruptcy. And the two unions got together and decided to join forces and form an association with the membership's ratification of this to represent jointly the merged America West / U.S. Airways, now combined airline. And so we formed the CWA IBT Association at that time to jointly represent the entire craft and class of the passenger service folks, both at the airport and reservations.
Has that been working pretty well for you since then?
It's actually been working really well. We have a wonderful relationship with my counterpart on the CWA, and we are on the same page with everything. So we have the same contract, and we just have just different jurisdictions when it comes to filing grievances and that type of thing. Any contractual grievances that are done as an association are done jointly.
Good. Good to hear. All right. Talk to me about what's going on with the passenger service employees and exactly what they do, the roles that they play, and what's going on. Obviously, money is a big issue. Can you give us some details?
Yeah, money is a big issue. We're the world's largest airline at American Airlines, and yet some of our employees are making minimum wage. So we have, since the pandemic, after the passenger service employees, both at the airport and in the reservations centers, took leaves of absence, unpaid leaves of absence, took early retirement to help the airline, helped lobby with the airline in Congress to get relief for the industry. We are now at a point where the economy is such that the labor market really is paying people. And unfortunately, American Airlines isn't keeping up with that. So we are in contract negotiations. We started in October of last year meeting with the company. And we are, you know, asking the company to pay our people what they're worth. They're assaulted daily by passengers, less so than in the midst of the pandemic when it was really rampant. But still it happens verbally, sometimes physically. And, you know, we deserve to be compensated fairly.
So it's still happening. And people, the passengers on those planes, I know they're unruly. Sometimes they drink too much. I was reading earlier, you even had water bottles thrown at you. Push, punch.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And to your knowledge, are these people that are committing these crimes, and they aren't crimes, are they being punished, or some looking the other way on this?
Well, it depends on the city. It depends on the city, the airport, whether or not they're punished. The company, I have to say, American Airlines absolutely is partnering with the union in trying to hold these people accountable, filing charges, supporting the members who file charges against these people. And I mean, like I said, it happens less now, but it still is prevalent, and that's unfortunate. And people get upset and whatever they have, because we are the people that are communicating the message of a delay or a cancellation or somebody who missed their flight and, you know, what options are available to them. People get upset, and we're the brunt of that energy. And it's really unfortunate.
And, you know, we've seen some crazy weather this summer. And as a result, flights are being delayed. So they take it out on the passenger service agents as well because of things like that, that you really can't control.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, our people do an amazing job at trying to get through this, but it is at times unbearable. You know, we've had in different locations, people having to be locked in rooms because the passengers will become a mob and security has to be called in the height of things. And it's really sad that it's come to that. It really is. So, you know, we're just trying to do our job and help get people to where they need to go as soon as possible. And we're the ones communicating the message, but we are not in control of the situation. If it's weather, it's weather. If the plane's not working, let's fix it and get you where you need to go as soon as possible.
Yeah, yeah. So many have short fuses. It's so sad, so sad.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about how many employees are we talking about in this category here, the customer service and flight attendants? And is it in a certain area? Is it around the country? Can you explain that part?
For the IBT, customer service and flight attendants throughout the country, different airlines. So it's approximately, I want to say, it's about 10,000 members across the country. And there are varied airlines that we represent. Sun Country, Republic Airlines, NetJets, American Airlines. So different country or different airlines throughout the country.
Now these other airlines that you mentioned, they're okay? Just American is playing kind of cheap here?
Well, so it's interesting. You negotiate your contract at different times, right? And what we're seeing at American, because our contract was up for negotiation, we started the process. And then the economy kind of went into a direction that the labor market really blossomed and people started paying more in different industries and in our own. Some airlines stepped in and extended people's contracts and gave them more money for a short period of time, right? Mm-hmm. So they would extend it for like 2 years and give them a pay increase for that short term to get people where they needed to be in the economy so that you could hire people and keep them. American Airlines, unfortunately, chose not to do that. So we are in the actual bargaining process that we have to fall under the Railway Labor Act. And we hope that this message that we did our national picket on the 15th of August, we hope that that sent a message, and we think it did to American, that we're serious and we're ready to get our people compensated and protect our work.
Yeah, that was a pretty broad picket, too. I see it happen in cities in Charlotte, North Carolina, Chicago, Dallas, Houston, Los Angeles, Miami, Philadelphia, Phoenix, St. Louis, Salt Lake City, as well as San Francisco. I see the story on Teamster.org. Another issue here, and this is something we've been addressing with various guests, artificial intelligence. It's my understanding that that may be an issue. While it's an issue now, it's going to become a bigger issue down the road, that some of these jobs could actually be replaced with artificial intelligence. Kim, what do we know about that right now?
Yeah, well, that's our fear, of course, because artificial intelligence is out there. And there's been stories that American already has one artificial intelligence bot, I guess you want to call it, named Gemma Flint. There was a story, right, for customer experience. If you are not happy with your experience, you call customer relations and they have a bot, an artificial intelligence that is going through the calls and answering. And we, of course, are worried and concerned that that would take away jobs from our, especially reservations members. Who that's their job is to, when you call and have questions, have issues with your flight, they're the ones that will be answering the phones, walking you through scenarios, helping you through your journey. And if that's replaced by artificial intelligence, that's a concern. So we have to make sure that the language we have in our contract protects those jobs going forward, because in my opinion, it's, you know, not good for the economy when we start losing all these jobs to artificial intelligence.
Kim, in my opinion, this is just going to make matters worse if they go in the direction of artificial intelligence. I mean, you're dealing with basically a robot here, and it's probably a good thing to have a human on the other line of the phone when you have a complaint dealing with a flight, a cancellation, a weather delay, or something like that. So has that come up in the conversation when it comes to artificial intelligence yet?
Well, you know, we gave our proposal for our scope, our work that is exclusively ours, back in February, and we've yet to receive a response from the company. So it's a concern of ours, because the talk out there on artificial intelligence, and because, you know, foreign carriers are already starting to do some of that reservations type work with artificial intelligence. We are expecting, you know, the company to come to us with some sort of proposal on this. So, it's a concern.
Kim Barbaro joining us in our live line today. She's with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, National Coordinator for Customer Service and Flight Attendants, and co-chair of the CWA IBT Passenger Service Organization, and president of Teamsters Local 104. Two websites you want to go to, teamsterair.org and teamsterslocal104.com. Kim, you got your hands full. You got a friend here on America's Workforce. Hopefully you can navigate through all this stuff. So please keep in touch with us, okay?
I will. Thank you very much for having me.
That'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we're going to check in with the National Council on Occupational Health and the United Steelworkers. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.